The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on today's Armchair Traveler, our journey is going to take us on a couple of 36-hour tours that were featured in the New York Times ongoing travel series, 36 Hours. Now, our first stop is Newport, Rhode Island. Our writer guide is Lauren Madison, and her article includes photographs taken by Elizabeth Cecil. This appeared in the July 27, 2023 issue of the New York Times. And I'm going to start with a little bit about the writer. Lauren Madison is a contributor to the New York Times travel section. She married in Newport 12 years ago, and she has been visiting and covering the city ever since. Now let's hear her story. On the surface, Newport is what it appears to be, the glamorous sailing capital of the world, with a new sailing museum to show for it. On the Narragansett Bayside, the harbor brims with America's Cup boats and celebrity yachts. On the Atlantic side, a rugged coastline with legendary surf and Gilded Age mansions. In between, picturesque streets are lined with boutiques, bars, and tipsy brides-to-be, and one of the largest collections of colonial-era buildings in the United States. Recently, locals have been reframing Newport's well-worn nautical narrative with additions like the new art galleries and an LGBTQ pride center, and by unveiling, if gradually, the town's leading role in the transatlantic slave trade. Lesser-known stories about Newport can be found off the beaten path, but with the city's compact grid, free trolley system, and bike-friendly hotels, car-free wanderers are sure to capture the essence of both worlds. Now, before we continue the story, I'm going to give you some highlights that are considered key stops. That's Bowen's Wharf and Bannister's Wharf, with an idyllic backdrop of boats, seafood restaurants, local shops, and colonial-era buildings offer a traveler's initiation into Newport, write the editors. Then we have the new sailing museum that will enthrall skippers and landlubbers alike. Next, the Museum of Newport History provides the context of the city's long and complex past. And our last item, the Ocean Avenue, is a scenic stretch perfect for mellow pedaling along the Narragansett Bay and the Atlantic coast, with hidden beaches and not-quite-so-hidden mansions around every turn. So now let's begin our 36-hour journey on a Friday afternoon. It's 3:15 p.m. when we will sail like a champ. Next to Bowen's Wharf, board a 12-meter America's Cup boat for a two-hour family-friendly sail. It's $90 up the Narragansett Bay. The America's Cup charters fleet includes the legendary U.S. 22 Intrepid, known for winning the sport's most famous race in 1967 and 1970. Cruising through the harbor, you may spy a white egret coasting off the bow and catch a fishy whiff in the warm breeze. Guests can pitch in, taking the wheel or trimming the sails, or simply relax with a can of sparkling water. The knowledgeable crew sprinkles in tales about points of interest, such as the 1870 Rose Island Lighthouse, where you can spend the night, and a red-roofed Victorian mansion where Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy grew up and later had her wedding reception with President John F. Kennedy in 1953. Now on to 5:30 p.m. when we walk the wharf. Back on land, Bowen's Wharf and Bannister's Wharf mark the unofficial starting line for exploring Newport. Along the historic brick and granite quay, you'll find moored schooners, seafood restaurants, and 18th-century buildings. Grab a stool at the Oyster Bar at the Clark Cookhouse, built by a sea captain in 1780, and pair a glass of Sancerre with freshly shucked oysters, $3.50 each, from Nova Scotia, Maine, and Rhode Island. Also make time to locate the first Rhode Island slave history medallion on the Chandlery Building behind the Bowen's Wharf anchor. It was installed in 2020, and you can scan the QR code to read about the port's history as a major hub in the transatlantic slave trade. It's 6:30 now, so we're going to enjoy a local feast. In a sea of tourist-driven fast-casual restaurants, Thames Street Kitchen is an ever-classy farm-to-table buoy. And before we say anything, it is pronounced Thames in this case and not the British Thames, as you might think. The chefs, Tyler Burnley and Chad Hoffer, take full advantage of the small-scale agricultural Aquanneck Island, home to the towns Portsmouth, Middletown, and Newport, where farmers are known to deliver produce off the back of a moped. Reserve a seat in advance of the bar to watch supper come to fruition in the open kitchen. Order warm salted bread with cacio e pepe pepper, which is $4, to soak up the yolky sauce of the raviolo with serrano ham and ricotta. That's about $10. Early reservations also mean top pick of shareable cuts of ribeye and strip steak, $3 an ounce. Then at 8 p.m., it's time to raise a glass to the past. New bars seem to open with each regatta season, such as the speakeasy-styled Bar 12 and Tiki Charmer Wharf Fish House. But who can compete with the OG? The White Horse Tavern, a national historic landmark that is believed to be the oldest tavern still operating in the United States, is toasting its 350th anniversary this year. It was a meeting place of the colony's General Assembly and Criminal Court for nearly 100 years and was also run for a time by a rich pirate. Under the big wood beams, patrons sip vanilla-infused smoked old-fashions at $17 apiece, then sharing stories about far-flung travels. Some are hoping history will be honored nearby, too. Across from the tavern in Liberty Square at Newport Middle Passage, monument has been proposed to honor the Africans who perished on slave ships and the enslaved workers who helped build the city. And as we continue the story, there is an image here that I'll share the caption. People sit at stools along a wooden bar where sunshine streams into the establishment. And then we see bartenders in white shirts and black ties working behind the bar. And then there's wooden fans that are spinning overhead. Now we move on to Saturday, and it's 10 a.m., and we're going to learn the ropes. The Sailing Museum, which opened last year in the historic Armory Building, is a high-tech interactive voyage across an ever-evolving sport. You'll design your own sailboat, learn its anatomy, and race alongside fellow museum-goers. Exhibits cover ocean conservation and barrier-breaking seafarers like Bill Pinckney, the first African-American to sail solo around the world, and Maureen McKimmon, the first woman to win gold in the Paralympic Sailing Olympics in 2008. Check out the America's Cup Hall of Fame, which displays models of the winning boats, and use the touchscreen to discover nationwide sailing organizations, be it a school, yacht club, or a community sailing program. Now on to Explore on Two Wheels. The time is 11 a.m. The first national bike organization, the League of American Wheelmen, was born in Newport in 1880. The mostly flat Newport remains a bike-friendly town today, ideal for breezy cruising. Pick up a rental at 10-speed spokes, then pedal away from downtown and out along peaceful roads past mansions and the Ida Lewis Yacht Club on Lime Rock, where the lighthouse keeper Ida Lewis rowed out to rescue more than 18 people between 1842 and 1911, including soldiers from a nearby military compound, now Fort Adams State Park. Fort Adams, which offers expansive bay views and guided walking tours at $20 a person, marks its 200th anniversary in 2024 and is home to the Public Sailing Center Sail Newport and annual summer concerts like the Newport Folk Festival and Newport Jazz Festival. Then we have another picture, and the caption reads, "People sit in a row of white Adirondack chairs on a grassy hill that faces the sea. A speedboat leaves a wake of white foam in the ocean, and sailboats can be seen in the distance. A server wearing an apron stands in front of the people in chairs with a tray." What a picture that is, huh? Now let's go visit the Capitol Hill Inn. It's 12 p.m., so therefore it's time for lunch on a legendary lawn. Pedaling 2 miles past Fort Adams, along Newport's bucolic southwestern edge, turn right at the sign for the Castle Hill Inn, built in 1875, as a summer home for the pioneering deep-sea oceanographer Alexander Agassiz. Now, while locals prize the hotel's grassy knoll for sundowns, or Sundowners. A midday reservation on the patio at the Lawn Restaurant brings plenty of close-up boat watching. Enjoy Point Judith Calamari at $19 and a large gratin pan of rigatoni al forno at $32 with eggplant confit or confit, tomatoes, olives, and goat cheese. Now, if it rains, the floor-to-ceiling windows in the dining room beautifully framed in Narragansett Bay. On a sunny day, recline post-feast in white Adirondack chairs as boats tack across the water. Afterward, follow the hotel's short private trail that leads to the Castle Hill Lighthouse, tucked into a cliff and listed on the National Register of Historic Places. 1 p.m., let's ride into the Gilded Age. Pedal south on Ocean Avenue along the breathtaking bluffs and past Brenton Point State Park, popular with kite flyers, until you reach the secluded Bailey's Beach. There's powdery white sand, few if any people, and no place to park a car. From there, a four-minute spin north on Bellevue Avenue will bring you to the Beaux Arts-style Marble House, and you can enter that at $25 a person, and which cost $11 million to build between 1888 and 1892. $7 million was spent on the marble alone. It was William Vanderbilt's 39th birthday present to his wife, Alva, who would make this home an unofficial command post of Rhode Island's suffrage movement. The free self-guided audio tour offers informative nuggets about rooms like the Versailles-inspired Grand Salon. Suffragettes drank tea from Votes for Women Chinaware in the Chinese Tea House, which today serves a $35 prefix afternoon tea on weekends. Now on to the Newport Art Museum. It's 3:30 p.m., and we're going to admire statement pieces here. Now, you ride north a couple of miles or hop on the bike-friendly number 67 trolley along the Bellevue Avenue until you arrive at the Newport Art Museum, an oft-overlooked wonder founded in 1912. In a current exhibition, Shaman Ladders and Other Stories, which is gone exhibit through November 5th, the Cuban-born Rhode Islander Ana Flores' deep-seated tree chairs invite viewers to find answers in nature. Newport is as much for art lovers as for philosophiles. Newcomers like the Cusp Gallery and the Matriarch Store are keeping the community's creative soul afloat, as well as the longtime art co-op Spring Bull Gallery and the local artist Chris Wiley. And let's see, by the way, if you're trying to think about that word I use, philosophiles, that are people who find peace and contentment with the ocean. So there you go. I suppose we have a few of you out there. Also, make time to see, during this time, the Pride in Retrospect exhibition, showcasing 50 years of queer history at the Newport Pride Center. It's a new inclusive space and resource for the LGBTQ community. Now on to 6 p.m., and we level up at the celebrated Ristorante. Bypass the crowd outside Scales and Shells, the Italian seafood institution since 1987, and instead, a door on the corner of Thames and Goodwin Streets leads you to its new sister restaurant upstairs called Upscales. Neither restaurant takes reservations, but an early arrival at Upscales, which is more laid-back of the two, should grant you the coveted balcony table overlooking Thames, where a hungry horde may still be huffing by the time you've finished the Lavender Bee's Knees cocktail at $14, and started on the lobster ravioli, which is $29. Next, we move to the Midtown Oyster Bar at 7:30 p.m., and so we're going to hit some high notes here. Move west on Thames past the booming Midtown Oyster Bar. The bachelorette parties and the glowing pedicabs rumbling along the cobblestones until you reach a little-known historic site on Pelham Street, the first street in the United States to be illuminated with a gas-lit lamp in 1805. Above the lamppost is a sign for dueling pianos, a rollicking piano bar experience with roots in the ragtime era of the 1890s. On the building's third floor, grab a drink with sparkling harbor views from the lounge area. At 8 p.m., two singing pianists will perform requested songs, be it Elton John's Benny and the Jets or Mark Ronson's cover of Valerie. Standing room tickets range from free to $20. Tables start at $100. Now we move to Sunday, and we have an image that begins this part. A view of a turquoise table with a cafe latte and a pastry with almonds on top. Both come with a cheery yellow napkin. It's 9 a.m., so we're going to rev up for the day. Bokup, a new cafe and boutique on Thames Street with a bright yellow-striped awning and robin egg blue Fiat parked out front, emits an irresistible jeu de verie, despite the neighboring gas station. Locals can guess that the person responsible for turning a dingy old liquor shop into a heavenly milieu is Cheryl Gibbon, the owner of the nearby home goods store Gibbon Living. And while you eat a warm spinach and feta feuille pastry and a cinnamon sugar cone, each $5.50, your eyes may travel across the tables topped with surf magazines and a Porsche photography book over a gingham settee and up the giraffe sconces and colorful striped beach bags and handmade palm hats. Almost too much to take in there, right? Then we have a snapshot of Ms. Gabon's adventures to places like Marrakesh, Cartagena, Marbella, and, of course, Paris. 10 a.m., we travel back through time at the Museum of Newport History, suggested donation of $5. Above the Newport Historical Society shop, dive into the city's long, fascinating, and complicated history. Learn how English settlers fled rigid Puritanism in Massachusetts and obtained settlement rights from the Narragansett tribe in 1638, I should say. You'll learn religious freedoms were celebrated in the 18th century among the Quakers, Jews, and Congregationalists, while nearly half of the families owned at least one enslaved person. Take in Revolutionary War artifacts and Gilded Age gossip and climb into a covered wagon that plays many history lectures. God's Little Acre, the county's or country's rather largest intact colonial-era African burial mound, is a 10-minute walk from the museum. Download the Action Tour Guide app for a self-guided tour of notable headstones such as Duchess Quimano and the Pastry Queen of Rhode Island. Then we have at 12 p.m., we're going to spice things up. On the way back downtown, we get lost on Broadway, a refreshingly untouristy slice of Newport with rainbow crosswalks, hipster coffee shops, craft cocktail bars, a record store, and neighborhood haunts like Hummingbird. The delightful chef-wife-husband team, Denza Bowen and Abraham Parks, have decorated the place with baskets, Jamaican hues, and Usain Bolt mural. Now, since 2018, the only black-owned restaurant in the city has been feeding devoted denizens slow-braised oxtail and piquant jerk cookie dishes with perfectly crisp fries. And while you sit in the window, savoring caramelized bites of fried plantains, a steady stream of clientele will come in to take in the golden beef patties. And you stay long enough, you might do the same. Wow, a lot of fun there in that location, huh? So 36 hours in Newport. Next, from Newport to the on the East Coast, we're going to skip to the West Coast and spend 36 hours in Santa Barbara, California. Now, Fredamoon is our writer guide, and the photographs for her article were taken by Tanvir Badal. It appeared in the July 13, 2023 issue of the New York Times. So let us begin. Santa Barbara, with fewer than 90,000 people, barely makes it into California's 100 largest cities. But this coastal enclave has an outsized role in the state's history. Settled by the Spanish in a military fort and mission in the 1870s, the city and its surroundings, which include the dramatic Santa Ynez Mountains, have markers of past everywhere, from indigenous Chumash cave paintings to the Adobe Presidio, a Spanish fortress. Graced by fragrant climbing jasmine and purple blossom jacaranda, Santa Barbara looks almost too good for its age, and, like the celebrities who live in the neighboring Montecito Hills, it has clearly had some work done in recent years, and among the several high-profile additions is Moxie, that's the Wolf Museum of Exploration and Innovation, which is a curious child's dream with its rooftop garden devoted to rambunctious water play. And in the time that we have left on today's show, we're going to hit highlights of this particular visit, and our key stops will include the Beckman Venture, the county's first biodynamic winery. It's a majestically scenic spot to sip wine in the Santa Ynez Valley. Then we have Barlico in the town of Olivios, or Los Olivios. It's a Spanish-inspired seafood-tasting menu worth the 45-minute drive out of Santa Barbara. And then we have the Ghana Huasca Lotus Land. It's a 37-acre botanic garden and was the four-decade-long passion project of an eccentric Polish singer. And then we have the Presidio neighborhood, the historic downtown area built around a Spanish fortress, where to savor Santa Barbara's past with a self-guided walking tour. So let's begin on a Friday afternoon at the Santa Barbara County Courthouse. And we're going to get a view from the top. Start with post-travel pick-me-up at Locum, a Turkish sweet shop on State Street, Santa Barbara's main drag. And you take your pistachio coffee at $6.50 a cup. The stroll down State Street, which closed to cars early in the pandemic, is now a tree-lined pedestrian and cycling avenue with parklets and buskers. Continue to the colonial or Spanish colonial Santa Barbara County Courthouse, surrounded by sunken gardens, fountains, and bunya trees. Climb to the courthouse's clock tower for a 360-degree view of the city, including the 1786 Santa Barbara Mission, the so-called Queen of the Missions. On a clear day, you can see the 4,000-foot La Cumbre Peak and the distant Channel Islands. On your way down, dip into the Gilded Mural Room, where the brutal Spanish conquest of California's indigenous population is depicted as an act of glory. And then there's an image, and the editors write, a view of an exterior shop window with black framing over the glass, and through this glass you can see ceramic pots, baskets, and hanging flowers. Next is the domicile, and we're going to take in a Central California home. It is not a trip to California if you don't come with a caftan. Find yours at Arlington Plaza's Folly, which is the embodiment of the Alta California good life. Delightfully cluttered by the shop, sells everything from colorful enamel cups to climate-perfect linen caftans, paintings by local artists starting at $36, to ephemera like a cast-iron bottle opener in the shape of a crown frog. Two blocks south in Victoria Court, domicile feels like the bohemian home of the most casually tasteful Californian you know. The shop leans heavily on Santa Barbara County-based producers, but it also embraces eclectic products from abroad. Traditional indigo aprons from Japan and hand-woven Chilean lampshades sit alongside hand-carved driftwood spoons by the local artist Ray Galdobon and blue-hued mugs by the local ceramicist Laurie Stout. Time to swirl a glass or two late in the afternoon. Santa Barbara County has nearly 275 wineries and 7 district wine regions. Fortunately, more than 20 tasting rooms in Santa Barbara's downtown offer a walkable introduction. Near the historic Presidio neighborhood, grab the last reservation at Frequency, a courtyard tasting room planted with citrus and palms, where $20 buys some of the family's winery's distinctive pours. Compare the two Syrahs made with grapes from separate vineyards to learn how different climates, the cool marine air of the Santa Rita Hills versus the valley heat of Los Alamos, how they impart flavor. Then head 6 blocks south to the Funk Zone, the goofily named post-industrial nightlife district at the foot of State Street, for a tasting at the Valley Project, the free-spirited little sister to the established and revered Kunin Wines. The tasting room's floor-to-ceiling chalk mural of Santa Barbara's wine appellations is worth the visit itself. There's another picture here, people sitting at black tables and chairs under a large white umbrellas. They're in a courtyard. It's daytime, the surrounding building painted white and red Spanish-style tiles visible from the roof. Now we are going to check in a Tondi Gelato and have dinner in the New World desert and dessert in the Old World, I should say. Now we eat on the flower-draped patio of La Paloma Cafe, built in the figurative ruins of not one but two of Santa Barbara's most beloved restaurants, a mid-century institution and the neon-lit Paradise Cafe, which closed to the lament of many locals in late 2020. La Paloma takes this lineage seriously, keeping the neon and restoring the building's murals. The restaurant's unmissable dish also nods to heritage. A Wagyu tri-tip with salsa, horseradish, and pinquito beans is $35.95. It's gussied-up version of Santa Barbara's regional barbecue known as Santa Maria style. For dessert, we stroll one block to Tony Gelato, the shop named for its owner, who lived in Italy for over a decade, features both classic flavors and salted caramel and seasonal sorbetto made with fruits like guava and persimmon from Santa Barbara's farmer's market. You can buy a cup or cone. It starts at $5. Now, it's time to cap off the night, and we veer from the funk zone to the Presidio and find some local color at Lovejoy's Pickle Room, a bar and a former 1940s-era Chinese restaurant. While this vintage dive may be best at happy hour, when it feels like the hidden realm of old-timers eating pastrami egg rolls and slurping house wine, its charms endure after its $2 off specials are finished. Drink a classic Mai Tai at $13 among the bar's red-tasseled lanterns, golden walls, and red vinyled booths. Then we have a couple of blocks up State Street in the Arts District. The Good Lion is a cocktail bar named for an obscure fable by Ernest Hemingway. It serves a fine coastal Negroni made with a Spanish herbal gin, wine-based Corsican aperitif, Amaro for bitterness and a hint of anise, and it's $15 in a dim-lit Art Deco-inspired space along the historic Granada Theater. And then we have a picture here. People sit at a dimly lit bar while a bartender pours a drink. Warm light pendants hang overhead, and there are candles on the bar top. Interesting look. Now, let's continue on, and we're going to go to Ghana Waska Lotus Land, and this is going to be Saturday morning. We're going to discover a botanical gem. Stop at Alisa, the pastisserie and cafe, for a pastry from its rotating selection, like the ricotta and squash blossom Danish at $5.75, and an espresso for the road. And you can be on time for your 9:15 a.m. admission to Ghana Waska Lotus Land. Tickets there are $50, where you'll have to reserve far in advance to be one of the 15,000 people a year granted access. This magical 37-acre garden in the Montecito Highlands is the work of the eclectic, many times married Polish singer Ghana Waska, who, according to myth, may or may not be buried somewhere in his sprawling property. Wander through cactus forest to immaculate Japanese gardens, to lush tropical orchids, banana trees, and ginger plants, an experience transportive enough to justify the high price of admission. On to savor some Mexican soul food by lunchtime. It's in the city of Taquerias. Corazon Comador stands out. The newest project of the chef, Ramon Velasquez, who earned Michelin recognition for his taco stand at Santa Barbara's Public Market, the Comador, a casual homestyle restaurant, opened in November after a pandemic delay and serves dishes inspired by his mom when Mr. Velasquez was growing up in Guadalajara. Now, the airy dining room, which has a TV playing nostalgic black-and-white Mexican movies, clangs with the sounds of an open kitchen and smells of dishes like the earthy mole coloradito that tops the free chips and the rich, complex pozole, a traditional stew, made with hominy and long-cooked pork broth. Now, if you want more, Mr. Velasquez plans to open his first fine dining restaurant, Alma Fonda Fina, in Montecito later this summer, and that would have been this past summer. Time to get out on the water in our visit, and we're going to, after years of drought, Cachuma Lake, Santa Barbara's expansive tentacle reservoir about 30 minutes out of town, is now full for the first time in more than a decade. So a blessing from all that recent rain. And there we're going to have to say goodbye, because that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.